If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Grief fundamentally changes who we are and how we see the world. It's painful and heartbreaking, but also transformative and magical. This podcast is about grief and loss, but more importantly, it's about life and living fearlessly. I'm Kelsey Chittick, and welcome to Moms Don't Have Time to Grieve.
Welcome back, everybody. It's great to have everyone listening. Today, we have a really interesting podcast, and we've talked to a lot of people who are dealing with grief, but we're kind of switching over this season and also looking at what is the support that we can give people and what are the new ways that people are talking about grief, experiencing grief, and supporting people through grief. So today I have Amanda Drews, who I don't know how we met. I'm not sure exactly. Do you remember?
I think we reached out. We're in the process of maybe doing a compilation or composition book of a bunch of different stories. And so we reached out initially to the publisher and then subsequently found the podcast. So
yes. And we're going to talk about what your nonprofit does in terms of the artwork, because that's exceptional. Mm-hmm. But Amanda has a really hard story and a really beautiful ending to the work that she's done with the grief that she had from losing her son. So, you know, I don't think I've spoken to anyone yet that lost a child. So this, oh no, I do. I talked to Max Gleason, who lost his whole family, but yours is a really unique situation. So I'd love for you to start just by sharing about getting pregnant with Hudson, his life, and then what it was like to lose him. And then we'll talk about what you've done with that hard experience and that gift.
Yeah. So my husband and I were married quite young, and we unexpectedly also had our first child. So we were quite young. It was before even our second anniversary. And we're like, oh, we're pregnant, like not really expecting it. And so we had planned on waiting a little bit longer than like the traditional year and a half to 2 year gap. But then when it became time to try, we experienced secondary infertility. So through the process of looking at all of the things and going to the doctor's appointments and figuring it out, we lived in a rural community in Seaside, Oregon, when we had my son, Calvin, my oldest, and we thought nothing of delivering there. Like, we just did it. And my husband is an athlete and like huge. So I'm quite small. I'm quite petite. I'm 5'2" and he is 6'7". So I have large kids. And so my first was born via emergency C-section and he was 10 pounds, 3 ounces. And I think everybody was kind of in a panic and in a stir, and I didn't really get that. I'm like, I mean, you deliver babies every day. Like, this is not a weird thing. Looking back, I noticed that. But then when I went to start having infertility doctor and looked at ultrasound stuff like that, ultrasound tech slipped and said, hey, did you have any help getting pregnant the first time? And I said, nope, not at all. And she's like, well, there is actually no direct path between your fallopian tubes to your uterus. I said, perfect, that's great. And she's like, so there's no way that you would have gotten pregnant the first time. Well, through reading records and stuff like that, I requested all my medical records and I realized that my uterus was put back upside down.
Oh my gosh, I didn't know that. That's Wait, so you mean when they pulled it out for the C-section, then they put it back in and they put it backwards?
Yeah.
That's highly unfortunate, to say the least.
Yeah.
Okay, so you have this kind of miraculous experience, and then you have this new understanding of why maybe getting pregnant the second time is a challenge.
Yeah.
Okay,
right.
So what happens next?
So I did the procedure that was not, won't go into detail there, but basically had it flipped back around. And so I did a procedure and then we were pregnant with my son Hudson within basically, I think it was like 2 months of that procedure happening.
Wow.
So very, very quickly. So we had him and by this time, my oldest son is 4 and some change. So let him know, honestly, was not too happy about not being an only child anymore. Like our whole world revolved around my older son. And so, but he came around, like he definitely came around and Edson was born healthy, 8 pounds, 6 ounces. I think maybe a touch early. He had some breathing issues initially, but no NICU stay or anything like that. Like it just was, you know, just how it was. And so, and he celebrated his fifth birthday and we went on to be a happy family of 4, 2 boys, 5 years apart. And everything was great. So then we celebrated my son's 6th birthday. And that night, my cousin and my husband's friends were both in from out of town. And we came back and opened presents at home. And Hudson was teething. And I had given him, I feel like an astronomical amount looking back, but probably a normal amount of those Highlands teething tablets and put them down, laid down with them. Rallied and came back just to chat with my cousin who was in town from New York and went to bed at a later hour than normal. And then he was still nursing. He was 13 and a half months old. So woke up just like anatomical clocks are an interesting thing. Woke up and was like, it's 4:30. Like he just must be really tired. But he was not tired. He was not alive. So I picked up his lifeless body, went into a hallway and just started wailing. Like I have no other way to describe it. And my husband and his friend, because they stayed the night, performed CPR. But I think in that moment, like we just know as parents, like instincts, like I knew he was gone. So 13 and a half months old. And ultimately he died of sudden and unexplained death in childhood. We kind of have this blurred line between SIDS and the other one. So depends on how you quantify it. SIDS, they say that you're dead kind of after 6 months, like there's no risk of SIDS. And really, ultimately, the highest percentage of SIDS happens within the first 3 months of life. And then there's SUDC, which is less known, but the average child death from SUDC is between the ages of 2.5 and 4. So I kind of fit into both categories, I guess. Yeah. Oh,
so, God, you know, as a parent, you put yourself in that position. And I don't know, I don't even know how to talk about it with you. And it's funny because grief, when it's not the same grief that you've had, it just feels like a different world. Everybody's right. Grief is so different. And I think all of us agree that losing a kid and a child is just your worst nightmare from the time that mm-hmm. You get pregnant till I assume you die, that you just want your kid to be okay. So in terms of Hudson's life, so let's kind of, I don't even know what to say. I don't even like to say, I'm sorry. What bothers you when people say it, when you tell the story, and what it sounds and feels like support for you? Is there anything people say that helps?
Yeah. So people assume, and I think this is across the board, even for you, Kelsey, like that we don't want them to bring up that person's name, like whether it's a child or a partner or whatever, because they're going to make us sad. And I think about it all the time. Like there's not a time in day. And I'm actually so grateful when somebody and says it by name, like that first little bit, the worst thing that people did is like, but really, how are you doing? Like, and looked at you with this like weird pity, like, and they think they're doing like a really weird thing, but they're not saying it like, but really how you're doing. Like, so they're trying to like create this weird blurred line. I'm like, just fucking say it. Like, I'm okay. Like, I'm not okay. And just say like, what is your hardship with Hudson right now? Or like, I've been thinking about Hudson and bring up a memory, or I can't imagine like what you're going through. And that's really awful. And it sucks. Like, why would you dance around? Like pretend it's like this giant elephant that's not even in the room. It's like standing on my chest. Right. For you to look at me with such ridiculous pity is the hardest thing ever. And then to not say his name.
Oh, I love like, that. That's great advice. Say the dead person's name. Don't give it and don't make it the title of your child or your son or your secondborn mm-hmm. or your husband or your sister. Say the name. That's really mm-hmm. important. I think honoring that we want to keep them alive. We don't right. want to talk about them dead. We want to talk about whether it was a week, a month, a year, 20 years that you had with that person. Most of us want to discuss how good it was. And that's maybe what you're saying on some level. Address yeah. what happened, but address that he is a part of our family. He is a person. Right. He has a name. And no, I love that. So that's good advice. Like, say the name as much as you can, because it makes you feel yeah. like they get it. Like, he was my son. Hudson's my son. Mm-hmm. Like, we can just talk about yeah. it. That's great advice. So talk to me a little bit about, you know, and now that you've created, and I'm just going to stop and kind of talk about what you've created, and then we can go back to your story with Hudson. But what was your son's nickname?
What was Hudson's?
Buzzy. So you've started a nonprofit called Buzzy Bees, which essentially, I'm not reading off of this, so make sure that I get it right, but it's support for people who have unexplained loss of children or any type of loss of children. Is it?
So we focus on the unexpected, but not necessarily the unexplained. And we okay. do support families specifically that have lost kids from the ages of stillbirth to 12 years of age. I think that the lines blur. You know, if somebody comes to me and says, like, my 14-year-old died of SUDC, can you please help me? I'm going to be like, yes.
Like,
yes,
well, you're like, nope. You know, you age out yeah. of our support. Yeah. No good.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you've created this. So I assume when Hudson passed away, you felt alone, scared, overwhelmed, like there was nobody else that understood in the world except your husband, and that the house was changed forever. And so at some point, what inspired you to decide, okay, I'm going to live in all that grief and that pain, and that's going to be my reality? That's one part of it. But somehow, in honor of Hudson or because something happened, what made you want to create a foundation?
Yeah, so that's a really good question. It wasn't supposed to be a foundation. We just thought we wanted to make sure that he stayed alive, like, and for our family and friends, like, we wanted to make sure that he lived. And we initially said, like, oh, we'll do like a charity golf tournament every year or whatnot. And we did, honestly, for the average person, I feel like, had a lot of support, but I didn't have the support from somebody that necessarily understood. And honestly, even if you have the support, like, even if you find the grief group right away, or you find your neighbor lost a kid, it's still your person. Yes. Like, Hudson was my person. And so, like, it becomes really unrelatable. And I think especially in that first 6 months of death, like, but you don't know exactly what I'm going through. Like, you didn't know who that was. You didn't know that intimacy. And I imagine for you, Kelsey, like, losing Nate, your husband, like, nobody knew what happened behind closed doors. Like, nobody could quantify that loss. Even if you talk to 1,000 people that have lost husbands, like, nobody could truly quantify that.
No, I love that idea too. I think sometimes too, you know, you have your personal rituals at home that no one else sees, with your kids, with your husband. And then they see Hudson out with you when you're at the park, or Nate and I at a party. But there's a really big difference in how we act at home with our children and our spouse yeah. and how we don't. And I think that's important, because I sometimes feel, and I feel like probably everybody that's lost someone, like, you don't even know what we had. You don't yeah. even know how cool my son Hudson was. You don't know this game we played that was just between he and I. And I feel that way too about mm-hmm. Nate. I'm like, you don't realize, like, I sat on his lap every night and watched, you know, some awful show with him for 5 minutes before I decided, like, he's going to watch it. Like, the little things are what nobody ever will know. And so sometimes grief can leave you feeling like they don't get it, because, and it's not their fault. They weren't behind yeah. closed doors with us. They don't know the secret words we had, or the cute things we said to our kids or to our spouse. And, you know, I don't know how we overcome that, because for me, I still am at a point where there's not a lot that people can say that makes me feel better.
Right.
If I've decided I'm in a mood about it, mm-hmm. no matter what you say, I'm going to hate you for a little bit, because right. you just didn't get it. And truthfully, you probably can't get it, because I'm in a mood. And mm-hmm. I just want you to know, like, my life, I got screwed. And I need you yeah. to know that for a little bit. And then there's also these other cycles where we go and do exactly what you've done with Buzzy Bees, is you've created something that you go, wait a second, not only was Hudson's life exceptional, although it was short, and we're going to talk about time, but look what I've done. Look what he did.
Right.
Look at this. Look at what this kid created in 13 months. Not exactly what I wanted or hoped for, but if our souls are here to make the world a better place, if we're supposed to bring each other together through love and connection, well, Hudson just crushed it, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, hopefully. Yeah.
Well, he did. I mean, what you've created has given people that didn't have support. And see, we hear you. Mm-hmm. Is that your dog?
Yes, I'm so sorry.
That's okay. Okay, so talk to me a little bit about what made you feel like reaching out to other people was what needed to happen, and kind of you grew on the whole golf tournament and the things that people typically do, but what made you set up something just for this? And then if you can tell us about the pictures or giving grief a voice that you all do in terms of artwork. Yeah.
So initially, like I said, there was no intention to start a nonprofit. We thought we were going to do something where we would do like a memorial golf tournament every year. And so I started thinking about like, okay, we're setting it up and like, what are we going to do with this money that we're going to raise? Like, we're going to give it to something, right? Like, we're not like, what are we going to do? And so I started doing research and realized that there was nothing, I didn't really want to support research. And so everything that fit my mission was like very research heavy. Like I could give money to the SGDC Foundation and we still give money to them. Like they do a great work. But for me as a person, I've always been like, if I could make one person's life completely different, right? And I can see the impact, that's worth it to me. I don't need to be this giant thing. Like, and so there's no roadmap to grief or losing a child or losing a spouse or anything like that. Like everybody's experience is different. But to be honest, like our whole experience with the funeral home was terrible.
Awful.
And it was awful, like completely awful. They charged us all this money. There was bad communication. We ordered like 3 caskets and none of them they could get in in time. And I guess ultimately like stopped communicating. I didn't go to any of those meetings. I couldn't do it. Like I physically couldn't move my body to walk inside the building. I drove there once and then just sat in the car.
Yeah.
So
that's something that's actually an interesting, the logistics of death should be a whole nother mm-hmm. podcast. And I don't think we ever, you really don't need to know about it until you do, because it's just an absolute shit show financially, emotionally, and spiritually to get your person from this realm to the next, however our society deems it. But I do think we have to find a better way, because I think for most of us, the death is really hard. But those first 3 months trying to then orchestrate that transition of that physical body is mm-hmm. a whole different type of pain and trauma.
Yeah.
That there's got to be a better way to do mm-hmm. this than we're currently doing it. I don't know what we need to do, but it needs to be something more tribal, something more nature-y.
Something different.
Something less than like a disgusting mortuary or coroner's office. And then these just like people that are literally seem dead inside. I mean, you make choices out of a pamphlet. You're like, is this happening?
Oh, the pamphlet, the book. And here's the clip art. This is the clip art you can put on. It's like, I used clip art in second grade to make my school presentation look good. Now you want me to freaking choose clip art to like put on my gravestone? Like, this is weird.
It's awful. And you're just like, why is this so expensive? Like they're gone.
Yeah.
Like, who's making money here? Because somebody is. And I know, God bless every crematorium and funeral home. Thank you for the work you do. And I didn't like it. I didn't like the whole thing. I didn't like it.
But the whole experience sucks. Yes. Yeah. 100%. So that kind of, that came up and it was just terrible. And then all the stuff like that. And initially it was like, how can we be there in like that direct time of need and give, like, let people know, like, what they can do, like, what are their roles, like, what, like, kind of the education. And that hasn't really come to fruition. But recently, I met another nonprofit out of San Diego called Empty Cradle that does just that. And they do amazing work. And I'm like, oh, no, this is kind of what we tried to create. So initially, we raised money to give money. So we're one of 10% or a small percentage of nonprofits in the nation that can give money directly to families who have experienced this loss.
Okay.
So I just write you a check.
Awesome.
You get a pedicure, you get whatever you need, you help burial, you do whatever you need, you buy groceries. Like you take that check and you use it however you need. And that still exists. We were just really slow to grow. And as we received applications or people said, oh, my friend lost his kid, or can you talk to this family? Can you talk to this family? I'm just one person. Like my story might not resonate with them.
Right.
Like they might not understand it. And so like going through that process, every single person I talked to said, I just want to say my child's name and talk about them without feeling uncomfortable. And I'm here and I do this because my kid lived, not because they died. right? And so I'm like, I heard that. I'm like, okay, why do I keep hearing the same damn thing? And why is there all these people out there and everybody feels so gosh darn alone? Like, why is this happening? Right? I feel so alone in my grief. But look at all these people at this walk or this golf tournament. Why are we all so alone? So,
because grief isn't really the party planning experience. You know, that's what it is. It's because it's not fun. So it doesn't bring people together, except in these like hard, big moments that are not, there's nothing great about it. So it's really an interesting life experience because nobody wants it and nobody wants to be around it. And those of us who have had it, we want to talk about it all the time, but it can be a real buzzkill at a party.
Right.
After two tequilas, when you're like, you won't believe it, but my husband died.
Yeah.
Yeah. I get it. So you're going like, how do we reach out to people that have been through the worst thing that nobody wants to talk about? And actually nobody knows how to support. And I don't know that anybody that hasn't been through it gets it. And I think that might be too far of a reach to ask of the human spirit because I think what you said about saying their name, that's about as good as we can get right now. Just make sure you say my loved one's name. Because the other stuff is so big.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
It's hard. So you guys went on and you expanded the program to doing, so you kind of found out what you needed. And then how did the paintings come into play?
Yeah, I think there had to be something more. Like early on in the process for me, a good family friend of my husband's offered to help me tell Hudson's story. And she's a published writer. And so, and I have cherished that piece of, I call it a piece of artwork. I've cherished that timestamp of where I was then and where I am today. And I can see my own growth and it's supported a lot of other people. And I was like, well, why don't we just do this for other people? So we hire professional writers and they go in to usually in non-COVID times, which we're moving towards only doing in-person interviews next year. And we interview families who have unexpectedly lost a child. And then at the end of that interview or that conversation, I hate to call it an interview because a lot of people have really yucky experiences with like media. So it's not that. It's a very intimate conversation that happens. And then after that happens, we show them a book of different commissions that have happened across the years and they choose an artist and that artist commissions an art piece based on their behalf.
I love it. And if you need to go to their website and we'll put that on the podcast notes, but there's some really beautiful pictures that show all the different ways that people need to remember it and everybody's way is different. So in terms of, you know, how do people find out about you all if they don't know? I mean, what's the way that people have heard about your foundation or your organization or how they get involved?
So we've worked really hard to try and do like these partnerships. It's a little bit word of mouth. It's a little partnerships. We do some like social media and some like Google AdWords stuff, which seems really cheesy and stuff like that. But honestly, a lot of people more recently are finding us just through a Google search and as simple as I just lost my child. What's next?
Right.
And I think that, and I'll be all of the artwork too, just to kind of wrap up that story in a neat little bow is I hear that people just don't talk about their child without feeling uncomfortable, but also the other part of it is a new memory of their child.
Yeah. I love that.
They just want a new memory. And I think for you too, like unexpected loss just takes a completely different form than somebody who's dealt with somebody who's been terminally ill or it's the end of life. Like it's just a completely different form. Like had I known, I would have done all these things, but we didn't know. So it's just a different experience.
So two questions I want to kind of end with. In terms of your marriage, as people are listening to this and trying to understand how do you survive? Because I really do think that there's two choices. You either survive it or your life just doesn't and thrive, or it ends up being the thing that you are stuck on for your whole life. And I don't mean stuck on, like, we're always going to be grieving the people we lost, but somehow there are people who move forward with joy. So for your marriage, how did you two navigate that? And what if any insights do you have on how you keep that from just wrecking something, because it's right. So painful for everybody and everybody handles it differently.
Yeah. It's so incredibly painful. Like, how do we get there? Right. And so my husband and I will celebrate 15 years of marriage in February. So we've been married a long time, and we did grieve very differently just because we didn't connect and we didn't grieve initially in the beginning, the way that each other grieved. We are able to go to each other and just say, I'm really struggling. And I find that actually, as long as we're communicating, that it happens at different times, you know, like we just struggle at different times and other things, like there's other life stressors. And I wouldn't say we're very busy, so I wouldn't say that we're like the best communicators with the day to day, but I always feel like we're able to check in with each other. And then I think that other huge thing is I can't be his person and he can't always be my person. We've had this great thing happen and I really want to come together to celebrate that. And there are times that we do. I really need my time around his date of death and his date of birth. And I do this thing. And my husband, Nate's always like, you want me to freaking blow out a candle for my dead kid? Like, that sounds terrible, but he does it. Like, he does it. Like, he just does it. And we just do things for each other. But I think finding other people, whether you talk about it or you not, that have been through the same thing, that you can support each other through that. He has a really good friend that they do a lot together. They play video games together. They golf together. And I think sometimes when he's really struggling, just being with his friend Chris makes a huge difference. I just happen to be very good friends with his wife, Moni. And just recently, we were at a party at their house. It was just us. We went over there for dinner. And I ended the evening with a good half hour cry in her closet. Her and I sat in her walk-in closet and I cried in her closet. Like, and I needed to get that out, but Nate wasn't my place to get that out.
I love that. That's brilliant. I think we need a lot of different people. We need the encourager, mm-hmm. the friend that you call and she says, listen, you're good. Your child's good. Your husband's good. They're in heaven dancing around. You need to get up and go. And then you need the yeah. friend that's like, we're going to sit here and cry and I'm going to cry with you. And this is the worst thing that's ever happened. And you need mm-hmm. the friend that takes you on a walk, and you need the friend that pushes you to go on a trip, and you need the friend that goes, let's 100%. Never leave the house again.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that. The biggest thing I try to talk about on this podcast, because it's the only way that it makes sense to me, is changing, because we can't change the pain of losing people, whoever it is, if it's Hudson, if it's my Nate, but we can slowly change the narrative of what makes a good life. And if we don't put years around it, we have a better chance of finding some solace in the life that the people we lost lived. Because if Hudson had lived, you know, 60 years and passed away when you were 80, it would feel really nice. And if Nate and I had grown old together, it would mm-hmm. have felt really nice. What I want to challenge is maybe they lived exactly as long as they were supposed to, if there was a supposed yeah. to. I don't know how you do that with a child. So that's a lot more challenging than I think my situation. But I do think there's something beautiful that Hudson's life and passing has created. And he had an amazing family for 13 months and you had an amazing son. So what is your take on that? Or do you feel like you kind of got screwed or both?
No, I mean, I think there was a reason. And I think so we recently changed our mission. It used to just be to support families who have unexpectedly lost a child and we recently said to change the American grief culture by way of supporting families who have unexpectedly lost a child. And I don't know, I think you said earlier, like, we're exactly where we're supposed to be. Like, as just saying the name, like if you could take little nuggets to better support people, you know, we don't do grief at all well. Like we don't have rituals as a heteronormative American white culture that does that well. And as much as I'd like to completely change that landscape, I know it probably, in my point of view, will never happen. Like, it's just, I want to change it. I want to help it. So that little nugget. And I think early on in my grief, probably a year into it, I was pregnant. We did have a subsequent daughter, and her name is Brooklyn. So Hudson was named after the Hudson car, but we ended up the Brooklyn River flows underneath, or the Hudson River flows underneath the Brooklyn Bridge.
Love that.
And so she's our little rainbow baby, which is the way a lot of people subscribe it, but we've transitioned that to just speak to our family. But I was so afraid I would never be happy again. Like, I was literally a year into it, like, I will never be happy again. My kids deserve something better. I'm pregnant with this child. I'm like, she's gonna be sad. Like, this whole pregnancy has been sad. Like, why would I do this? Like, just so, like, and angry at myself. I'm like, why would I do this? But my grief counselor said, you will never experience carefree happiness or weird, like, just like sad moments where you just feel a little melancholy. But she's like, your highest highs and your lowest lows will be dramatically amplified.
And I
have found that to be true.
I think you just described it. I haven't been able to say that way, but what I've always thought of it as a bandwidth. So when you haven't lost somebody unexpectedly or expectedly, but that you didn't want to lose, I always try to, I get grandparents, but I'm talking about like people that you thought you had for a long time. Mm-hmm. Still, you have a life where there's like, there's happy and there's sad and there, but it's a very small bandwidth. What happens when grief hits, your ability to experience pain is so big, but so is the other side. The whole rubber band gets stretched mm-hmm. to this huge human experience that makes life brighter and sadder and more painful and much more amazing. Because you get it. You've like cracked open mm-hmm. the emotional bandwidth that you didn't have when life was safe and easy and calm. So I don't know anybody that I have spoken to that says I would change anything about the lives of the people they've lost, because that was that life. And although it didn't turn out the way we thought, pain is worth it, because the beauty on the other side of just understanding how big and magical this thing is pretty astounding.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can relish in just the beauty of life so much differently. And there's moments that I pause and I am so thankful, but there's other moments where obviously I'm just very incredibly sad, you know? And so, yeah, I haven't heard it described either as bandwidth, but yeah, it's like this, I have experienced that immense pain and I have the amount of joy. And not saying that anybody that hasn't experienced that maybe hasn't gone on a different journey that's also absorbed something of that nature. But I honestly think, as far as hope, like that statement has stuck with me for so long. And I'm so grateful for this beautiful woman who was able to quantify that.
Yeah. I love it. Well, I love what you're doing. I think when people lose a child, when you lose Hudson, that is probably everybody's worst fear. And to see you standing there honoring your son, Hudson's built this entire foundation and way of looking at grief and supporting people that probably would have never had any idea that there was other people out there that they were going through. So I think your son's exceptional. I am so glad that I got to hear his story. And I think you're doing the good and hard work that our souls are meant to do. Especially when we go through hard times. So congratulations. And I'll put all of the information in the podcast notes. But thank you for coming on, Amanda, and just taking the time to talk about the hard things, but doing it with such grace and ease and honesty.
Yeah. Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it, Kelsey.
Perfect. All right.
Thank you for listening. And remember, keep going. It gets better.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.